Hello, hello, and welcome to the Wing Women podcast, hosted by best mates and journalists, Frankie Gradden, that's me, and Charlie Gowans Eglinton, that's her. Chaz, you made it!
I've trudged through the snow.
What a winter wonderland.
Bambi on ice. It is Monday morning, and it's so snowy outside. Honestly, magical.
Quite gorgeous.
It is. I thought I was going to die last night. I had been at my sister's baby shower in West London. I went round to hers afterwards. 10 o'clock. It had started snowing, but it was quite light in West London. Got a zip car. By the time I got back here, I was doing 8 miles an hour and the wheel skiddy light was flashing on the dash. And when I parked, I wasn't in control of the car. The main roads were all right because the big ones have been salted. And then the others, there was enough traffic that you could drive along them. But then I turned nearly at my house and knew immediately that I'd made a mistake because the snow was a couple of inches deep and no one had driven across it. So the car immediately was just doing its own thing. And I just had to let it drift to the side, like something out of Fast and the Furious, but in slow motion. Towards a curb where I attempted to park, which was basically just me putting the handbrake on and being like, right, here we are.
Bye then.
Bye. Sorry, zip car.
That was terrifying.
It was awful, and then had to walk the last bit home.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Did you have suitable footwear on?
Yeah. Those Penelope Chilvers Chelsea boots that I always wear.
Thank God.
Make me look like a sort of gardening Tory, but I love them.
Necessary for this kind of weather condition.
Yeah.
Oh, you poor thing. You must have felt very shaken.
I was exhilarated afterwards because I thought, I've made it out alive. And I didn't smash the car. I mean, I'm glad I paid the £4 excess.
Oh, you wouldn't want that weighing on your mind. It would
have been absolutely terrifying. It's remarkable. London grinds to a halt. They've not salted my road as well because it's a quiet street. So, can't wait until it all turns icy.
Dangerousy.
But it's very festive, isn't it?
It is.
This is going to be our last podcast of this year
because
we're not going to record on Boxing Day.
No.
Because I'll be half cut at whatever hour of the morning.
I will be stuffed with a panettone, hopefully.
Gorgeous.
Yeah.
So back in the first week of January.
Of Jan.
On the Thursday.
Yeah, we can tell you all about it.
So we're feeling very festive in our last Christmas recording of the year.
Christmas tree lights are on. Stockings are up.
Wonderful.
Thank you very much.
What's nice is that your tree topper, which is a toilet roll mouse that Ben made, now looks like it's been made by your toddler.
Yeah.
And so then it adds something because you're like, oh, that's so sweet. Alfie made a toilet roll decoration at nursery and you put it on top of the tree. What lovely supportive parents.
It was crafted by Ben. I think he was about 26. She's called Angel Mouse. I think I've spoken about her before on the pod or the newsletter. She's called Angel Mouse. She's a tiny mouse in a toilet roll. She's got a hat from, do you remember when Innocent Smoothie Bottles used to come with tiny bobble hats? Yeah. She's got a hat on. She's got paper wings. I've redone her paper wings.
I was thinking they were looking better. Shabby. Yeah. Did you add those pearls?
No. Ben added the pearls. She's got a tiny pearl necklace on. I rejudged her wings. For her. Because, you know, she's knocking on 10 years old.
Right.
So,
what have you been doing?
I still have a cold, Chaz. This is 2 weeks now. I've forgotten how long colds stick around for. I know it's the season of colds. Everyone's getting poorly because no one's been out for the last 2 years. And we're all mixing and mingling and our immune systems are down and blah, blah, blah. But it's really killing my festive vibe. I've had to cancel some Christmas plans. And as discussed last podcast, I was really in the mood for it. I was going all out.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
I had some festive wardrobing. I was desiring champagne. And I've had to cancel lots of it, which is sad. So I'm grumpy. But turns out, bang on trend, because word of the year, 2022, goblin mode.
They need to read the room, though. Nobody says that.
No, I don't think anyone says it. But I mean, I look in the mirror and think, goblin.
Okay, so you think you look like a goblin.
I think, and I feel quite goblin-esque. I will read you what the actual Oxford Dictionary definition is. unapologetically self-indulgent, lazy, slovenly, or greedy, typically in a way that rejects social norms or expectations. I enjoyed the Cuts definition of it. Overwhelmed, underdressed, and depleted of all ability to act normal.
I get that, and right that now is a very of-the-moment thing, but I really don't think anyone uses that word. And it's supposed to be a word that has just shot into everyone's
common
saying
parlance.
Exactly. Suddenly it's everywhere. I don't think that's a thing. It's a little bit out of touch, I thought. It was a bit cringe, like your elderly relative being like, doesn't everybody say this? And you're like, oh no, actually, someone once said it on the James Corden show. It's the opposite of a thing we're all saying.
Is this a Gen Z thing?
I don't think
like,
it
there's
is
a whole world going on that I don't know about. Mm-hmm. So potentially.
Potentially.
It feels apt for me right now.
At least you're part of the moment.
I'm zeitgeisty.
You are the moment.
You know?
Yeah, I guess that takes the edge off missing some Christmas parties.
You know.
Sorry though.
It's fine. I'm also quite enjoying that I am another trope that's very on trend right now.
Which is it?
Frazzled English woman.
Oh, yes, yes.
I mean, when am I not frazzled English woman? But I'm feeling particularly frazzed right now.
I love this. It's also very Christmas specific, the frazzled English woman. Yes. She's got too much luggage. She's got too many things to carry. She's in a hurry.
It's Iris in the Holiday. The one I don't get. So this is, again, I think born of TikTok. The Gen Zers are kind of looking at Christmas films, I think depressingly, are about 20 years old now. When was Love Actually?
Don't.
And kind of finding humour in the female tropes. So it is very Bridget Jones. But the one I don't understand is Keira Knightley's character in Love Actually. To me, she's not frazzled.
She's not frazzled at all.
She's not frazzled. But
she wears a lot of cream, doesn't she?
I thought it was all like cream roll necks. But apparently a part of the uniform of a frazzled English woman is a Baker Boy hat.
Interesting.
So I think that's where that came in. Did you ever wear a Baker Boy hat in the noughties?
No, I did not. And that is a blessing for everyone. My mum never actually bought me one when she was buying me those flat caps. That was the same era. I didn't wear those either. And my mum, instead of thinking that I should be Keira Knightley in Love Actually, was like, are you Madonna in her Guy Ritchie era?
Oh my God, amazing.
Are you in the countryside? Possibly.
How many flat caps did she buy you?
Three, I think. She bought them consecutive Christmases. I'm sure I've told you this story.
No, I knew
it's one of my faves.
I knew she bought you one once upon a Christmas. I didn't realise it was a recurring gift.
No, because the second Christmas, she bought me another flat cap. And they were nice as well. She was going to like a proper
Harris
hat maker.
Tweed.
Exactly. And I unwrapped one and was like, Mum, you've already bought me a flat cap. And
she was like, how many does a gal need?
Have I? I've never seen you wear it. And I was like, exactly. Because that's not in my style wheelhouse. I don't do a flat cap. I don't really do any caps or hats.
Oh,
apart from the summer, you know, baseball. Low-key, celeb incognito.
Sure.
Certainly not flat cap. Mortifying.
Quite mortifying.
Lockstock me.
Apples and pears.
Geezing around in a flat cap. Imagine. Did you ever wear a Baker Boy?
I can't wear hats. I'm not a hat person. My head is too small. My neck is too long. Maybe if I did have a flair for headwear, I would have gotten into them more. But I feel like at the time, I thought they were probably a bit naff. I also, to my credit, never enjoyed a trilby.
Well, neither did I.
No, I know, but I didn't mean to accuse it.
How dare you?
But I mean, they were quite the thing.
They were.
You know, Britney liked to trilby. Justin liked to trilby.
I did have a fake Von Dutch once when I was like 15.
Oh, nice. Trucker
cap. Trucker cap.
Okay, big cultural moment of the week. I know the answer to this already, or I think I do. Have you watched Harry and Meghan's documentary on Netflix?
I actually haven't.
No.
Is that what you thought the answer would be?
Of course.
I know it's a big cultural moment that everyone is talking about. However, I'm not a royalist, A, but I'm not really interested in the royals, B. I do think there's been an incredibly racist treatment of Meghan Markle in the media. And the way the British tabloids have gone for her is horrifying. I'm also really not that interested in royals as celebs.
Yeah.
Or celebs in that kind of realm. So I haven't. Have you?
Yeah, I have. I mean, like you, I'm not overly interested in them, but I must have some interest in it because I sat and watched the first three episodes, which is 3 hours.
Wow, okay.
I know. I think initially it was going to be a hate watch. Not that I hate Harry and Meghan. I don't feel hugely either way towards them. But I thought it was going to be, here is a wealthy couple who I've gleaned from the media and social media, live in this incredible house with chickens in the garden, and it's all very idyllic. They've got two lovely children. It's going to be a moan about their lives. I don't need that. Right now, what's going on with the economy? It feels particularly uncomfortable or a bit icky to hear
them in Montecito living a very kind of luxurious
privileged
lives,
being like, oh, it's been so tough for us. I've always felt that with celebs when they moan. I understand it's not easy being a celebrity. I can appreciate that. But the level of money and privilege and gorgeousness that comes with it, I'm just a bit like,
oh. What's easier than poverty?
Exactly.
If you had to choose the one.
If you had to choose. So I really thought it was going to be like that, and I'd find it really irritating. However, what I will say is, they are very lovely. I mean, obviously they've made the documentary, so they're not going to come across badly, but they come across really likable. You know, when you're just smiling at the television.
Yeah.
I couldn't have been more thrilled watching it. It was so weird. I didn't know much about their story of how they met, and actually that was very sweet. A lot of the information we knew already, there's kind of no big revelations. And actually, they really don't talk about the royal family in the first three episodes. The second three episodes are dropping, I think, on Thursday. So probably when this podcast comes out. So I don't know, obviously, what gets revealed in the second part. But the first part is very much about the media and their treatment of the royals. Firstly, of Harry, and I guess because we are a little bit younger than Harry, I was very unaware of what was going on with the media and the princes, especially after Princess Diana's death. But he does talk about that, and it does sound really shit. The palace has a contract with the British media. There's a handful of newspapers who are on a rota, and they get stories, they get kind of preferential.
And they get invited to things, they go on all the tours and all of that with them.
And it keeps the royal family current, relevant. They need it for publicity and to stay a part of the public's lives. This contract was made, I think, about 30 years ago. So Harry and Will are the first generation who have grown up with this being part of the deal of their lives. You did feel for him when he was talking about having lost his mum at a young age and then having to grow up, which is tricky enough as it is without having lost a parent, and then with all this huge paparazzi attention. They'd camp outside his school, and I remember the stories about him being a wild party animal, and all of that was obviously exaggerated and kind of turned into a celebrity story. It must have been really horrid. I really did feel for him then. And then obviously, well, him and Meghan talk about the press treatment of both of them, particularly Meghan. And it was vile. I mean, I remember it being completely vile.
It was vile. Definitely racist.
Oh,
I remember the headlines at the time.
Yeah.
Working at a newspaper, seeing those headlines and thinking, oh my God.
Yeah, absolutely. And even now, seeing the reaction to this first part of the documentary, there's not so much heat on Harry. There's a lot of heat on Meghan, on attention seeking, and Meghan's getting in the way. All of that comes back into it, which just feels really awful. And it makes me wonder why they did the documentary, because I understand why they removed themselves from the royal family. It makes me think, well, then why have you invited the press to comment on it again?
Yeah.
I suppose they will be expecting a reaction and they can prepare for a reaction and probably blank an awful lot of it out. But I did think, gosh, I wonder why then you've removed yourself and you have this sort of haven of a life, good for you, why step back into it?
But then I suppose having to hold your tongue and not respond to everything because you know it's always going to be taken the wrong way would be exhausting. And this is why I'm really not engaged with this. I mean, I watched the Oprah interview with Megan. I have watched bits and pieces and occasionally written about it. And I think why I'm not engaged with it is that to me, it's ridiculous that they should be the villains of the royal family when you've got Prince Andrew. My mind is blown, to be honest, that we've decided this is unacceptable. Yeah. This happy couple is unacceptable for what? Like a mixed race couple in the royal family. Let's all be up in arms about that. But like everything else the royal family does, apparently fine.
Yeah.
Apparently they're the ones who are, you know,
troublemakers
and damaging the reputation of the royal family. Lol. But I do think they do have a degree of creative control with this documentary. Mm. So it's their way of getting their point of view across. Cynically, though, they also now have to find a way to make a living.
Yes.
And Harry has never, that I know of, kind of made his own. Obviously, he was in the military, but probably never thought he would be out on his own and not be a jobbing royal who does the circuit and cuts ribbons. And Meghan certainly can't go back to being an actress, because how could she? She's such a public figure now. So they're in a peculiar position.
They are.
And working out how to fund that lifestyle. And also, as we might have guessed from their Montecito home, they're probably not used to doing things on a budget.
No.
So they're probably not thinking, do you know what? We can just about scratch enough money for a one bed. We'll be fine. And I imagine they still need security and things of that ilk that I wouldn't think about when putting together a budget, but that they will, because they are world famous.
Quite. Well, and I think the Netflix deal is multiple millions of pounds.
Yeah.
And in the trailer, Meghan's got her Hermes blanket on the seat behind her, and you got to earn some dollar to be able to pay for those. Lovely. It is interesting. And I think I came away from that first batch of episodes just feeling very sad that they aren't part of the royal family, because I think at one moment when the media was embracing them, it felt like this new chapter,
the Fab Four,
in the royal family, and they could be modern, contemporary, and people like us would relate to them, and generations behind us would find them relevant, and it could be this new thing. They could be this sort of beacon of progression and hope and goodness, and that felt really hopeful.
When Kate was first dating William, and there was all that media coverage of her mum having been an air hostess. Mm. And I feel like there were lots of soundbites around the lines of the Middleton sisters being social climbers.
Yeah.
And that it was always her plan to go after a prince. And all of that horrible attention on Kate.
Yeah.
Who is now so widely loved. Because she doesn't ever offer an opinion.
No, she toes the line.
Is a big helpful factor in that. She never says anything that is not the royal point of view. But there was a moment where it felt like, okay, how amazing to have women who haven't come from 20 generations of landed gentry in the UK, a different point of view, and people who might actually understand real life more if they didn't grow up in cotton wool, as the rest of the royal family did. But we don't have that.
We don't have
that. Instead, we have this.
Exactly. Which feels slightly disillusioning, you know? I was just like, oh, God. That is a missed opportunity.
Mm.
Sad. Anyway, I will be tuning into the next three episodes.
Okay, great.
Just because I've come so far that I feel like I need to finish it off.
I did a very grown-up errand this week.
Go on.
I went to a picture framer's.
Did you?
Yeah, I've never had a picture professionally framed before. I've bought frames and then I have ordered mounts online so that they are custom cut bits of cardboard to fit the frame so that it looks a bit more professional than shoving a poster in a frame, which was obviously what I used to do. But I've never gotten something professionally framed before. It felt like a really adult rite of passage.
Very much so.
Yeah.
How does it look?
Well, it's not done yet, you know, it's a process. I've dropped them off. I went in.
Did you select your wood for the frame?
Yes. So that was fun. They had all the little cut corners of wood.
Love those.
And all the different shades of beige mount. And we layered them up and discussed everything. And I looked at different types of glass.
Wow. I didn't know that was a thing.
Yes, because you can get museum glass that's anti-reflection.
Nice.
And also UV treated if you don't want the colours in what you're framing to be affected by sunlight over the years.
Bloody hell.
I know. Considering I've still got the odd print up in my house that is something I've ripped out of a magazine. It was a real departure. I loved it. I imagine it's what it feels like if you order bespoke furniture or in any way just don't fit your house from IKEA and or eBay. But it was really fun. It's my nudes that I'm getting framed, which got delivered to me 2 years ago. So I WhatsApped the artist. Her last message to me was, great, send me a picture when they're up. 2 years later, I replied, just drop them at the framers. that she recommended. She's called Bronwyn Whittaker and she's in Tufnell Park.
Lovely. My fear of framing is how very expensive it is.
It is expensive. Yeah. That's why it's taken me 2 years.
Yeah. You've been having
because I had to pay for the artwork, so then I couldn't then afford the frame at the same time.
Yeah. I mean, it's wood, it's glass. Why is that so expensive?
I just don't know.
Even just buying a picture frame from a shop feels an expensive endeavour. I'm passing this off as a thoughtful Christmas present to my parents. It's actually me trying to get some tit out my house. I've framed some artwork that Alfie's done at nursery. Has he done it? Did another kid do it? Did a nursery worker do it? Who knows?
Did somebody just trip holding some paint?
I don't care. They're getting it for Christmas. Happy Christmas, Mum and Dad. It's a thought that counts. £50 frame.
You're joking.
From John Lewis. Standard size. I know. I mean, I have gone to John Lewis, but reassuringly middle class and expensive John Lewis. Maybe I could have got a cheaper one from Amazon. I don't know.
But then you do want it to be good quality and
you want it to be good
look
quality.
Nice because you are hoping it will last for generations and also that when you move house, it's not going to break.
True. I am very pleased for you.
It was really fun. I'm excited.
Well, it's an investment, isn't it? Yeah. Also, if you've got nudes of yourself, I mean, how fabulous.
I was quite anxious about that, actually, because I haven't been able to ever unwrap them. I wrote a piece for The Times magazine. I went and sat for nude portraits to sort of see how that would affect my body image and to try and come to terms with how I feel about my body.
It was a very good piece.
Thanks. You do have to say that, though.
I do.
But I appreciate the bias. But I then couldn't open the package because they're unset pastels. And the artist, Hester Finch, doesn't like to set them because it changes the colours and the way that it looks, apparently. So they have to be framed a certain way. So I couldn't just pull them out and I couldn't have just put them in a normal frame.
Right.
They needed
professional work.
Professional work. So I hadn't seen them in those
2 years. So you hadn't taken them out, not because you couldn't bear to look at your naked form.
But because
you didn't want to smudge them.
I would have accidentally smudged them.
Sure. How did you feel looking at them again?
Good. They're beautiful. She is an amazing artist and they're really beautiful works of art. I need to wrap my head around it.
Yeah, I mean, when it's your body, that's a difficult one,
yeah.
I think.
Well, because we went to see that Lucian Freud exhibition the other week and I love his work and went to see an amazing exhibition of his work in Venice when I was 18 or something and found it really important. It really stuck with me. And those nudes are not kind.
They're not flattering.
His nudes are not kind.
No.
They are not flattering at all. It's very visceral.
Yeah. I mean, look at the one of the Queen.
It's not a nude of the Queen. It's just a head. But it's honest to the point of, can be quite brutal or just very confronting to look at.
Nice word, yes.
Hester's are completely different and they're these kind of soft, bright colours that aren't true to life colours necessarily. And not unkind at all and not in your face rolls of skin and fleshiness and skin doesn't look like it's on a butcher's block. But it is me naked and there is a roll there and a roundness there and a droop of a boob, which is all true. And I didn't ask her to fix me because I'm not supposed to need fixing. That's the point. But it's like looking in the mirror every day.
Yeah.
But hopefully having them on the wall, I'll start to think of them just as art, but also possibly like my body a bit more. We'll see.
We'll see.
I don't know where I'm going to hang them, though. So if I hang them in the living room, the next time the plumber comes to snake the drain, there's some news. You can't really tell it's me, maybe. But if I put them in the bedroom, that's weirder because...
Come into my boudoir.
Right, you welcome someone back and then there's two nudes of me over the bed. And Anne have already painted it like a pale pink, the room. So it'd be like a weird...
Quite sort of vaginal.
Intense.
Yeah.
Right?
Do you like what you see?
Exactly. Mm. I could just lean into that and get like a sort of feather trimmed robe and maybe like a fainting couch. Just really go with that vibe. Maybe that's the way forward.
Oh my god, fantastic. I'm excited to see them.
Thanks, babe.
I have never seen them in the flesh.
If you're not.
As it were. As we have mentioned, it is the last podcast before Christmas. So Charlie, I want to talk about Christmas traditions and party must-haves. Because I was reading a piece in Style over the weekend and some famous people were saying what their party essentials were. Sam Cam loved her high heel. DJ Fat Tony was all about a nice selection of soft drinks for the non-drinkers.
Okay, yeah.
Other people talked about perfect playlists, party games, etc.
Right.
So I would like to know, what is your Christmas party must have?
Wowee.
What makes it go off with a fizz pop bang?
It's probably some kind of booze or food. I feel like those are my essentials. You're putting me on the spot here, but is it a cocktail sausage? Ooh, I like a smoked salmon blini Christmas morning breakfast.
I am interested in Christmas morning breakfast because people have lunch at different times or the main meal at different times. Sometimes it's like a midday. So then what do? Do you have like a little Weetabix?
We do not have rigid traditions because I was born in Australia. Obviously there, it's the middle of summer. It's really hot. You are not going to do a roast.
You put a shrimp on the Barbie.
Nobody says shrimp or Barbie.
Do they not? Prawns.
No, it's not even a thing.
Oh, that's disappointing.
I know, I'm sorry. But yes, some seafood would definitely happen. And then when we moved here, we've changed. We've had a duck, we've had a goose, we've had a chicken, we've had a turkey. We really mix it up with different roasts. We do different things. I think it's more as I became an adult, I started to think, what would I like to do? But Christmas morning is tricky, actually, because we really argue over this. I don't normally have breakfast. So in my day-to-day life, I'm not that hungry in the morning. I'll have like a milky coffee. My mum can also go without or just have a coffee. My dad and my sister wake up immediately hungry and need to eat a full meal. We often go away just in the UK for Christmas because we all live in London. No one has a big enough house for everyone. So we'd want to go for an early morning walk on a Cornish beach or somewhere. I'm saying, let's just get up really early, dash out the house, just chuck on some clothes, welly boots, etc. Go for a walk. Dad and sister would need to have a pre-walk breakfast and then a post-walk breakfast. And then by that point, mum and I need to start cooking lunch. So everything's, and when do you open presents? Ooh. Because they're just constantly having breakfast. So it's tricky. The smoked salmon blini is a thing that I just want to do for myself, so I just force it on everyone else because it feels very fancy. And very I would never lovely. Just have that in the rest of the year for breakfast. So it feels like a joy to me. And then maybe like a cocktail as we make lunch.
Oh, nice.
It's just going to be delicious food for me. What's yours?
Mine are very food related. An Iceland prawn ring.
Right.
I j'adorerais them. Oh my God.
Tell me about it. I've never had one.
Oh, so.
It's going to involve mayonnaise, isn't it, though? So that's why I haven't had it.
It involves a sauce, which I think is described as a seafood sauce. Mm-hmm. What is it? Is it mayo mixed with ketchup? I don't know.
Is it a Mary Rose?
It's quite orange. Mary Rose is that kind of nice pinky. This is quite corally orange. It's a bit alarming. Obviously, it's been frozen. So you get your plastic ring of the shelly tails on the prawns, but the rest has been stripped.
Nice.
Quite big, plump, delish. They're arranged in a circle. In the middle is a little divot in the plastic platter. And there's a sachet of the orange sauce that you then pour into it. Obviously, it's been frozen. It then defrosts. So it's a peculiar gelatinous texture.
Mm-hmm.
Not for you.
No.
Charlie's literally turning green as I'm telling her.
I hate mayonnaise so much. And any of that kind of consistency of sauce.
It's got like a wibble. You know? So. But
it's got flashbacks to the cafe I worked in. Awful.
It's so delicious. I could bosh half of that away within about 5 minutes.
Yum. So when do you have that?
That's nibbles pre the sit down meal. But nibbles could start kind of 2 hours before the sit down meal. So there's some nuts, some crisps, sometimes a little smoked salmon whirly thing with a pasty thing in the middle.
Yeah.
Don't know what they are, but they're nice. But I stipulate an Iceland prawn ring. They're just so good.
See, upsettingly, my dad is allergic to shellfish. Which is very shellfish of him. And also meant that we never had prawns on the barbie, as you put it, because poor Bruce, it's not very Australian of him, is it? Can't eat a prawn. So we never have them in the house. Mm-hmm. And that is so Christmassy to me.
Yeah.
A bit of seafood and a posh thing that you don't buy every day.
Yeah.
But we can never have them in the house. He can have smoked salmon because it's not a shellfish. He can have fish.
Fine.
But I can't get bougie with any kind of prawn situation. Crab. A crab would be lovely. A dressed crab.
Very nice. Mm. Yeah, I mean, it's a highlight for me.
Yeah.
I absolutely adore them. And then the other thing that I am disappointed, if not there, profiterole tower.
Ooh.
Yeah. I love profiteroles so much, but never think to eat them the rest of the year round. Mm-hmm. It feels specifically festive. And then you can heat up the sachet of hot chocolate sauce, pour it over. Has to be cream inside a profiterole. I don't like ice cream inside
one. Oh, no.
No. Well, I went to Covardis the other week and had their famous profiteroles. And I was a little disappointed because it's ice cream inside. Mm. And I feel like the coldness of the ice cream makes the choux pastry feel a bit brittle, if I'm being honest.
I always feel that ice cream should not be put with other things. You just want a fully cold mouthful. I don't want it mixing.
You do struggle with the hot and cold.
Well, yeah. You just don't taste anything properly.
Yeah.
I bet understand. You didn't get the nuanced taste of the choux because you were ice creamy.
Didn't.
Numb mouth.
So those are my two non-negotiables. Absolutely has to happen.
I don't think we really have a pudding
what?
At Christmas. Because we're so full from the mains.
But
I
that's
think we
not
probably
the point.
Just have some chocolates or something.
You don't have an obligatory Christmas pudding. I mean, we also have a Christmas
pudding.
Oh
no, we've never had a Christmas
pudding.
You've
never had a Christmas pudding?
No.
Oh my God. No one likes the Christmas pudding. No one wants the Christmas pudding, but you have a Christmas pudding.
No.
Then you light it with brandy.
No.
And then everyone's like, oh, I'll just have like a really small amount. And then you just have a bowl of Christmas pudding in the fridge that you eventually throw away.
Sorry, never happened.
Wow.
So we dabble with different desserts, but we've never settled on a tradition of something. Fish rolls would be fun.
Because you can just have one or you can have several.
I wouldn't just have one.
You can just eat them throughout the year. We can't talk about profiteroles in front of Ben because he... One year we had two profiterole towers. Someone brought a profiterole tower to my parents' house. There was just so many. Mum gets panicky if the fridge is too full of food.
So does my mum.
She's like, I don't know where we're going to keep it all. What are we going to do? Which is hard at Christmas because there's a lot of food. She spends most of the time just in an absolute dither about how overstuffed the fridge is.
Yes. Oh my God. Yes.
So in an effort to kind of help out, Ben was kind of single-handedly trying to eat through one profiterole tower, which was a salted caramel one, so extra rich. Poor thing, he ate so many. You can't mention the word profiterole in front of him. He kind of goes a bit sicky looking.
Well, actually, if you're looking for a new Christmas recipe, I wanted to recommend to you an Instagram account that I'm really into.
Go on.
It's at Cult Flav, like Flavor Flav, you know?
Flavor.
It is a couple who take a cookbook and then for a week / 5 days of the week, cook different recipes from that cookbook every day to see how difficult they are, to see how long it takes you, how expensive it is to buy all the ingredients.
Okay, so they're like putting it on trial, testing it
out. Exactly, and you actually watch them make the things so you can see what skill level you would need to make. Because sometimes if you pick up an Ottolenghi cookbook, you need so many ingredients, you need 14 hands.
Pomegranate molasses. Where do you sell that? Where?
Three ovens.
Yeah.
Pestle and mortars coming out your ears. Mm. It's too much. It's elaborate. I don't have the counter space for this level of preparation.
Give it a bloody rest.
So they try out different recipes and then you get to see if you actually want to eat that food, if you actually would make those things from that cookbook. It's great. It's a banger.
Sounds like a good idea.
And also if you're thinking of buying someone a cookbook for Christmas, you could have
that's
a look
a nice
and
one.
See what they recommend.
Oh, good.
Mm, I'm okay. Into it.
That's a good idea. I've actually got some Crimbo recommendations as well. Shut up, I've actually read a whole book.
Congratulations.
Don't. It's only taken me all year. I've actually read a few. So if you are, A, looking for some books to put on your Christmas list, I'd recommend these. And if you are looking to buy somebody some books, why not buy them these? I don't know what their taste in books are, but they might like these. Lessons in Chemistry by Bonnie Garmus. Fun front cover.
Everyone's talking about it. It's hot book of the Mo.
And often I find with hot books of the Mo, I often don't want to read them because too many people are talking about them. And sometimes I felt disappointed in them. Maybe because they've been built up so much. And then you read them and you think, she didn't like it that much. But this one delivers. It's set in the 50s, maybe the 60s, I can't remember. But it's about a female scientist who unexpectedly becomes a TV cook. And it reveals a lot of the misogyny of the time and she has personal trauma. But it's written in this quite quirky, humorous way. So it's almost quite light to read. But there's some solid, serious undercurrent themes going through. Great. You know? So it's like, it doesn't feel fluffy, but it doesn't feel too weighty. It's that perfect balance. And I think nice to read over the Christmas period. And as I say, the book jacket's nice. And I know we shouldn't buy books off the back of what they look like.
Frankie's bookshelves are colour coordinated.
Yeah, they are. And I'm not going to be embarrassed about that.
I'm not saying you should be.
No.
I'm just pointing out for reference.
They are colour coordinated. And they look great.
They do look great.
Thank you so much. The other one, I don't think this is that new, but it's Olive Kitteridge, Elizabeth Stroud. Mm-hmm. I read O'William earlier in the year. So I picked up Olive Kitteridge.
It's great.
It's brilliant. Elizabeth Stroud's ability to tell the minutia of a person is fabulous. And this book, Olive is the kind of consistent character, but then each chapter is almost a person who intercepts in her life in some way. So you meet a lot of people. And in just the short space of one chapter, you feel like you get to know them really, really well.
I think she does human observation really well. Yes,
exactly.
Which is very compelling to read.
Mm.
And it really fleshes out a character for you, doesn't it?
Yeah.
It's those brilliant little details.
A lovely thing to read. And then a film, and I'm going to do a name drop here. We were actually at a Christmas party with the co-writer of this film, Charlie, at the weekend. Zach. It's called I Used to Be Famous. And it's
did
on
you
Netflix.
Watch it?
Yeah, I did.
Oh, that's nice.
Yeah. Well, I watched it because he was talking about it. And I thought, I've met you, I should watch your film.
How was it?
Good. It's really good. It's not set at Christmas, but it feels Christmassy.
Right.
There's this...
Like Die Hard. They are set at Christmas, actually.
Yeah. I mean, very different genre to Die Hard. It's heartwarming without being too sentimental. It's based in Peckham. I love films that are based in London. Always nice to recognise what you see on screen.
Mm-hmm.
It's about a guy that used to be in a boy band and a young drummer, and they kind of form this unexpected relationship and kind of have this stab at success. Of all the shite Christmas films I watched recently, it was actually really good.
Great.
Yeah. So that's a nice one to watch whilst you're hunkering down in your goblin mode, if indeed you are.
With a profiterole tower.
Oh.
Well, I think that's all we've got time for.
We shall sign off.
Thank you so much for joining us. If you like what you hear, please rate, review, subscribe, all of those things. I don't know if anybody does those, but we say it anyway. It's like a Christmas tradition.
Isn't it?
That nobody wants the Christmas pudding, but it's on the table anyway. You know?
Exactly. We'd like to say a big thank you to our podcast producer, Emma Crampton.
Merry Christmas, Emma.
Merry Christmas. And as mentioned, we will be back at the beginning of the new year. So have a lovely one. Happy New Year, Merry Christmas, all of that.
All of the stuff. Have a great time.
We'll see you in 2023. The future. Will we be flying in space cars?
That would be a really quick turnaround for space cars.
It would, but that's what I really imagined 2023 would be like. We'd wear a lot of silver.
It's 12 months in a year, so. We'll see you then.
Bye.
Bye.